Opening narration.
Ekatra Foundation presents the Ekatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI.
Introduction.
Welcome back. Today, we're doing a deep dive into a figure who looms large over the 20th century, Winston Churchill, a man whose life story is just packed with drama, failure, and ultimately, world-changing impact.
Absolutely. And our guide for this is Sir Martin Gilbert's brilliant single-volume biography, Churchill, A Life.
Right. Gilbert was the official biographer, so he had this unbelievable, unrestricted access to Churchill's personal papers, millions of documents. It's really the definitive account, condensing decades of research.
And what we want to do today is maybe get past that familiar image, you know, the cigar, the V sign, and really understand how the leader of 1940 was forged. Gilbert shows it was decades of, well, spectacular failures, huge ambition, and just profound experiences.
It's not just history, is it? It feels more like a study in resilience, maybe foresight.
Exactly. And the human spirit under just immense, almost unimaginable pressure.
So we're going to unpack how this really complex, often quite flawed figure, frequently out of favor, marginalized, even somehow possessed this unique mix. Courage, vision, that incredible rhetorical power to stand almost alone against Nazi tyranny when it mattered most. It's quite a story.
The chronological journey.
It really is.
Let's start then with those formative years. He was born at Blenheim Palace, 1874. Very aristocratic background, no doubt.
Oh, undeniably. But Gilbert really digs into the fact that it wasn't some idyllic childhood. It was actually quite lonely, emotionally somewhat neglected.
Especially with his parents, right?
Yeah.
Lord Randolph, his brilliant but very distant father, and his mother, Jenny Jerome, who was more of a glittering socialite.
Precisely. And Gilbert draws this fascinating line, connecting that sort of emotional void to Churchill's intense lifelong drive, this need to prove himself, maybe to live up to or even surpass his father's legacy.
So it wasn't just raw ambition, it was deeply personal.
Deeply personal. And interestingly, despite the grand setting, he wasn't a star pupil. His academic record at Harrow, even Sandhurst, was pretty mediocre.
Which hints at maybe a different kind of intelligence, not the textbook sort.
Exactly. More suited to action, perhaps. And he certainly found action. He actively sought it out as a young army officer, a war correspondent.
Gilbert lists this incredible range of conflicts. Cuba, India's northwest frontier, Sudan, including that famous cavalry charge at Omdurman.
The last great charge, yeah. And these weren't just thrills for him. Gilbert argues they were crucial learning experiences. He was studying warfare, empire, logistics right there in the field.
But the Boer War, that was the big one early on.
Absolutely. His capture as a correspondent, his really daring escape that made him a national hero overnight. And Churchill, being Churchill, knew exactly how to leverage that fame.
Straight into Parliament.
Straight into Parliament in 1900. He understood the power of narrative, especially his own.
So he burst onto the political scene as a conservative. But then pretty quickly, 1904, he does something audacious, crosses the floor to the liberals. Over free trade, mainly.
Yeah, a huge risk for a young politician. Gilbert presents it as driven by both principle he genuinely believed in free trade, but also, let's be honest, calculated ambition. He saw opportunity with the ascendant liberals.
And what's surprising, perhaps, is his role within that liberal government. He wasn't just a standard politician. He became quite the social reformer.
He really did, establishing labor exchanges, unemployment insurance, minimum wage laws. Gilbert makes a point of highlighting this progressive streak. It shows a genuine concern for ordinary people, something that maybe gets lost in the later wartime image.
Fascinating contrast. Okay, so moving forward, war clouds are gathering over Europe. 1911, he gets a huge job, first Lord of the Admiralty. Head of the Navy.
A critical post, and Gilbert shows him being incredibly forward-thinking here. He pushed hard for modernizing the Royal Navy.
This is the switch from coal to oil, right? Uh-huh. And naval aviation.
Exactly. Revolutionary changes. He understood that naval warfare was evolving rapidly, and he wasn't afraid to challenge the old guard. He really grasped the strategic implications.
But then comes this dramatic, catastrophic fall. Gallipoli, 1915.
Uh-huh. The Dardanelles campaign. He was the main political architect of the plan. And when it failed, with horrific casualties, he became the scapegoat.
It looked like his career was completely finished. Devastating.
Utterly devastating. But Gilbert argues Gallipoli was this brutal, humbling lesson. It taught him about the complexities, the immense human cost of war. It tempered his impetuosity, perhaps.
And his response was, well, remarkable. instead of just fading away.
He joins the army. At 40 years old, he goes to serve as a lieutenant colonel in the trenches in Belgium.
An incredible move. Talk about resilience.
It absolutely restored his reputation for courage. And crucially, Gilbert notes, it gave him this firsthand feel for what the ordinary soldier endured. That connection was vital.
And it paved the way for his return to government.
It did. Back in 1917, he held various key posts, war and air secretary, colonial secretary, involved in redrawing the Middle East map.
And then later, Chancellor of the Exchequer in the mid-20s, making that controversial decision to return Britain to the gold standard.
Yes, 1925. A decision Gilbert shows had pretty severe consequences. It aimed for stability, but ended up restricting the economy, making things worse during the general strike of 1926. So even in his comeback, controversy wasn't far away.
Which leads us neatly into the 1930s, the famous wilderness years. Out of office, politically isolated, clashing with his own party leadership over things like India.
To many, he seemed like a figure from the past. But Gilbert argues this period, this exile, was actually crucial. It was when his foresight, his moral courage, really came into sharp focus.
Because this is when he starts warning about Hitler.
Relentlessly. He becomes this lone, powerful voice warning about German rearmament, about the true nature of the Nazi regime. He saw the danger when almost everyone else in power wanted to look away.
And the establishment under Baldwin and then Chamberlain, they were pursuing appeasement. They basically dismissed him as a warmonger, didn't they?
They did. But Gilbert's point is powerful. This wasn't just Churchill railing against the tide. He was meticulously gathering data, studying German publications, building an undeniable case. His time out of office freed him to do that deep analysis.
So the warnings went unheeded.
Tragically.
Tragically. But that very isolation, that consistency in his warnings, meant that when war finally came, he was the one leader completely untainted by the failures of appeasement. He was proven right.
And the call finally came. War breaks out, September 39, he's back at the Admiralty. The nation cheers.
That famous signal went out to the fleet. Winston is back.
And then the ultimate moment. May 1940, France is collapsing, Britain seems next, Chamberlain resigns, and Churchill, at 65, becomes prime minister.
At Britain's darkest hour. And Gilbert captures how his words, his oratory, became perhaps the nation's most vital weapon then.
Blood, toil, tears, and sweat. Exactly. No false promises. Just grim determination. He unified the country, mobilized the will to fight on, especially when Britain stood completely alone after the fall of France, during the Battle of Britain, the Blitz. His words gave people courage.
Beyond the speeches, though, his diplomacy was key, forging that special relationship with Roosevelt.
Absolutely critical. Gilbert details the immense effort Churchill put into cultivating that bond with FDR, knowing American help was essential, and also managing the very difficult but necessary alliance with Stalin after Hitler invaded Russia.
A real tightrope walk.
A constant balancing act. Gilbert portrays him as this incredibly hands-on leader, driving the war effort by sheer force of will, sometimes demanding, often interfering, but ultimately inspiring. And making incredibly tough calls, including controversial ones like the bombing of German cities.
Then victory in 1945. And yet the huge surprise, he's voted out of office almost immediately.
A stunning result. The country, exhausted by war, wanted Labor's vision for a new social welfare state. But Churchill wasn't done. Not by a long shot.
No, 1946, Fulton, Missouri. The Iron Curtain speech.
Again, showing that foresight, defining the new Cold War reality before many others saw it so clearly. Then he pours his energy into writing his massive history, The Second World War.
Wins the Nobel Prize for Literature for it, remarkably.
Yes, in 53. And he even gets a second term as prime minister, 1951 to 55, grappling with post-war recovery, the nuclear age.
An absolutely extraordinary life journey. Eventually, declining health, retirement, and his death in 1965 met with this outpouring of global grief. A true titan.
Core philosophy and values.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit more. Thinking about Gilbert's portrayal, what really drove Churchill? What were the core beliefs, the values underneath it all?
I think Gilbert consistently points to a fundamental belief in human dignity and liberty. That seems to be the bedrock. It fueled his opposition to tyranny, whether it was Nazi fascism or Soviet communism. He saw them both as attacks on the individual spirit.
That moral clarity seems key.
It gave him this incredible resolve, this unshakable core, even when things looked bleakest.
Three pivotal turning points, implicitly covered in chronological journey. Focusing on Gallipoli, wilderness years appeasement, becoming PM in 1940.
When you look back at that long life full of ups and downs, what stand out as maybe the most pivotal turning points? those moments that truly altered his path. Gallipoli has to be one, surely.
Oh, absolutely. 1915. The sheer scale of the failure, the public disgrace, it could have broken him. But instead, as Gilbert shows, it forged him. It taught him brutal lessons about command, responsibility, the cost of war. And his response going to the trenches was transformative for his reputation and his understanding.
Then maybe the wilderness years, that whole period in the 30s.
Yes, definitely. Being politically isolated, seemingly irrelevant, but using that time to develop his deep understanding of the Nazi threat. His lonely stand against appeasement wasn't just a political position. It became his defining moral cause. It set him apart and ultimately made him indispensable when the storm broke.
So failure led to insight. And then the third turning point has to be May 1940, becoming prime minister.
Without a doubt. The moment when all those decades of varied experience, military, political, failure, foresight, oratory, suddenly converged. He was, as Gilbert argues, uniquely prepared because of everything he'd been through. It was the ultimate crucible, and he rose to meet it.
Human lessons and reflection.
So, listening to this incredible story, what does it all mean for us today? Sitting here, decades later, how do Churchill's struggles, his triumphs, connect?
Well, there are so many lessons, aren't there? Firstly, I think, is this idea of embracing failure as a stepping stone. Gilbert's account is just a masterclass in resilience. Gallipoli, the wilderness years, the 45 defeat, none of it was the end. It shows you that how you respond to setbacks is what truly defines you.
That's powerful. Don't let failure be final.
Exactly. Learn from it. Adapt. Find a new way forward. See it as training, almost.
What about his communication? Those famous speeches.
Right. The second lesson is surely the power of principled communication. His clarity, his honesty, even when the news was bad, built incredible trust. It shows you, in any leadership role, whether it's work or community or family, how vital, clear, inspiring, honest words are, especially in a crisis. No jargon, just conviction.
And his constant learning. He was always reading, writing history.
That's the third point, the importance of lifelong learning and preparation. Churchill wasn't just naturally brilliant. He worked incredibly hard to understand history, strategy, politics. He built this huge reservoir of knowledge. It really underscores for all of us how crucial continuous self-education, staying curious, is for navigating whatever challenges come our way.
It prepared him for the unexpected. And what about standing alone in the 30s?
That leads to the fourth lesson, maybe the toughest, the courage to be unpopular. Trusting your own judgment, your own research, even when everyone else is telling you we're wrong. Gilbert shows Churchill paid a price for his stance against appeasement, but he stuck to his convictions. True integrity means facing uncomfortable truths.
Very relevant today. And finally, his personal struggles, the black dog of depression.
Yes, Gilbert doesn't shy away from that. It shows that even people who achieve great things can struggle with mental health. Churchill's life suggests that immense drive and purpose can coexist with, and perhaps even be a way of managing, those inner battles. It humanizes him profoundly and offers hope, perhaps.
Three final takeaways.
Okay, if we had to distill this incredible life, based on Gilbert's deep dive, into three final takeaways for our listeners, what would they be? Let's start with an emotional insight.
Emotionally, I think it's the sheer power of resilience fueled by purpose. Despite setbacks, despite depression, his unwavering belief in liberty and his sense of destiny kept him going. It shows how a strong why can help you endure almost anyhow.
An intellectual insight.
Intellectually, it has to be the crucial link between deep historical understanding and foresight. Churchill didn't predict the future. He understood the patterns of the past and human nature, which allowed him to recognize the danger of Nazism when others didn't. History wasn't just academic for him. It was a vital tool for navigating the present.
And finally, a universal, practical life lesson.
Universally, I'd say it's that adversity isn't just something to be overcome. It's often the very process that forges strength and prepares you for your most important contributions. Churchill's failures weren't detours. They were essential parts of his preparation. The challenges you face might be doing the same for you.
Closing narration.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.